It's the Popmatic Podcast for April 1st, 2015.
Seriously? Just kidding.
Seriously, oh. April is National Poetry Month, and on this episode, we're going to talk about my favorite Welsh language poets. Popmatic Podcast. Stop talking. I'll probably leave that in. This is the Popmatic Podcast where you can rock out with your library card out. I'm Brian, and hanging out with me today are
Amanda,
Mike,
Bill,
Jeremy.
On this episode, Welsh poetry.
Yay!
April Fools. We're not going to do an episode about Welsh poetry, or at least the gang won't let me do that.
No matter how much Brian wants to.
It's April Fool's Day, so we're going to talk about funny stuff. Come with us and get your fool on. Fool on. Jeremy?
Yep.
So what's fooling you this week besides my false modesty?
Well, I am a regular Joe like every other Joe. I like laughing. I like listening to comedy albums and stand-up, watching stand-up specials and listening to comedy podcasts on a semi-regular basis. But what lately I've come to really love listening to comedians read their books. Authors reading their own work is sometimes an iffy game. They know their work better than anyone else, but sometimes their voices sound better on the page than they do spoken aloud. This is a reverse scenario for comedians. Their work comes alive after it's written and spoken into a microphone. So enjoying their books sort of requires a sense memory of actually knowing their voice and hearing it in your head. But audiobooks let you be lazy in that way.
I love audiobooks.
I do too. When I think of lazy comedians, I think of Jay Leno. But today I'm going to talk about Jim Gaffigan. Hi-o! So I first encountered Jim Gaffigan in Squiggle Vision back on Comedy Central's animated series Dr. Katz, Professional Therapist. We used to have an audiobook of sessions from Dr. Katz. It was on cassette. And unfortunately, we no longer have it, but it was great. And this show ran from 1995 to 2002, and it featured stand-ups doing their routines disguised as sessions with a therapist played by comedian Jonathan Katz. And this show was sort of a nexus of modern comedy. People that everyone knows today were on the show, and like I say, like it introduced a lot of these people to people like me who were teenagers at the time. Louis C.K., Mark Maron, Bob Odenkirk, Jon Stewart, Dave Chappelle, Mitch Hedberg, and many, many others had sessions with this doctor. And Jim Gaffigan was there too. He did a bit about a manatee being lazy. He called it a sea pig. And then he gave voice to the manatee saying, "I live in the ocean." So if you've ever seen him perform, you know Jim Gaffigan delivers joke after joke after joke, sort of introducing a topic and then carpet bombing it till it dies almost. Both his new book, Food, A Love Story, and his previous book, Dad is Fat, are the exact same. This guy is very, very prolific, but he also has the rare distinction of being identified with a single joke, and it's about Hot Pockets. I've probably not eaten a Hot Pocket since 1996, but anytime I hear his name, it brings the flavor of chewy bread, gelatinous cheese, and quotation fingers meat to mind. Even without Gaffigan, I have a disorder which makes me remember an unhealthy amount of theme songs and jingles, so I likely would have remembered the Hot Pockets jingle, which is really just Hot Pockets, though it was sometimes preceded by a, "What are you gonna pick?" And then Hot Pockets. So anyway, he's very famous for this bit. And my wife and I saw him perform at the Ryman here in Nashville, Tennessee, many years ago. And he did the Hot Pockets bit as an encore, like a band playing its hit sort of as a reward for making you sit through new material. And I think that's incredible. So his book Food is sort of the perfect coupling of author and subject. He routinely uses the word baconator in his act. He talks about food with a sort of like ridiculous passion that, as someone who
loves cookie butter.
Who loves cookie butter and who, if he were... I recently decided that if I knew I were dying, I would go on a Leaving Las Vegas-style binge of combos and Mountain Dew and ice cream and pizza and just not care about it. So a lot of the material in this book, Food, is also featured on his 2014 album, Obsessed. And he's sort of recycling some of his material for his books and expanding them in the books. But and also his wife and writing partner, Jeannie, they have 5 children together, which also makes his book, Dad is Fat, about parenting coupling that is almost as good as he and his wife seem to be. So check out Food, A Love Story, and Dad is Fat by Jim Gaffigan. We have them both in print and audio, and they are available as downloads.
Ooh.
Amanda?
Well, I'm going to go a little old school today, way, way back in the delightful decade of the 80s. I don't know exactly how I came across it. My family liked Star Wars, and so it made, you know, the natural leap to watching the movie Spaceballs, which is written and directed by the immortal Mel Brooks.
There it is, planet Druidian. And underneath the air shield, 10,000 years of fresh air. We must get through that air shield.
We will, sir. Once we kidnap the princess, we can force her father, King Roland, to give us the combination to the air shield, thereby destroying planet Druidia and saving planet Spaceball.
Everybody got that?
Spaceballs, the movie.
Princess Vespa's spaceship within range, sir.
Good.
What's going on?
It's either the 4th of July, or someone's trying to kill us.
Now we will show her who is in charge of this galaxy.
If you do not give me the combination to the air shield, Dr. Slotkin will give your daughter back her old nose.
Only one man and his trusted companion can save planet Druidia from disaster.
Okay, Eagle 5, coming in.
Lone Star.
First, they must learn the secrets of yogurt.
Yogurt? I am the keeper of a greater magic.
The Force?
No, the Schwartz.
Avoid capture on a distant planet.
Tell them to comb the desert, you hear me? Comb the desert!
Found anything yet?
We ain't found.
Battle the entire Spaceball army.
My hair! He shot my hair!
Holy!
And escape the clutches of Dark Helmet.
I see your Schwartz is as big as mine.
Abandon ship! Proceed to escape pods!
What the hell's the matter with this seatbelt?
When does this happen in the movie?
Give me Paul!
Spaceballs, the movie.
How do I know you're not making faces at me under that thing?
And may the Schwartz be with you!
You know, I was young enough at that point that my dad kind of had to sit us down and say, okay, now not all this dialogue is going to be repeatable. But it didn't make us not get to watch it.
Cool dad.
Yeah.
Good going.
Yeah,
right,
we had that conversation.
Just ignore it.
It's like, don't say this by grandma. So for those of you that don't know, Spaceballs is a parody of the Star Wars trilogy. Mel Brooks plays Yoda. No, Yogurt.
Yogurt.
Yes.
I hate yogurt. especially with strawberries.
That was my first foray, and to this day, I love Bill Pullman. Like, he was my first movie screen crush, and so, like, anything he's in,
That's the only time that I liked Bill Pullman.
Well, see? So we agree on that.
Oh, wait, did I just play my snob card?
Pardon me, would you have any Grey Poupon?
Oh! You did!
Grey Poupon.
Hey.
I think this is a reoccurring joke card.
I could talk about his. For me, the movie that changed my life was Lost Highway, not because Bill Pullman was in it, but just because that movie is screwed. But the Torchwood, Children of Men. Sorry, I just have to plug that. He plays the villain in that.
Bill Pullman does.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
Well, you know what? I am mistaken. Correction.
Yeah.
He played the villain in the 4th season, the one in it that's set in America.
Okay, well, I've seen, because Nick made me watch that, so
yes.
I have seen that.
The fourth
and I did
one.
Get excited that he was in it, and then I got over it because it was weird.
Yeah, but he played a super creep, yeah. Yeah, sorry, I derailed
that's,
you.
Okay, that's okay. I can bring him back. Then, you know, from Spaceballs, I moved on to Robin Hood Men in Tights, Dracula Dead and Loving It, and I didn't really, like, I kind of went forward. This is the 80s, and Mel Brooks actually started working in the 70s with great films like Blazing Saddles or Young Frankenstein.
Frankenstein.
Thank you. And it's interesting. I mean, we're 40 years out at this point, and now looking back, he's won all these awards for these movies, and that would be like, you know, 40 years into the future coming back and seeing, like, Adam Sandler win these movies or Will Ferrell win. Yeah, like, it kind of blows. I mean, he's won an Emmy, a Grammy, an Oscar, and he won a Tony for the producer, so he's one of a very small group of people that's an ego. Yeah. He got it.
He's an EGOT.
So,
he was an EGOT.
Editor's note. An EGOT is a person who's won an Emmy, Grammy, Oscar, and Tony.
But one of my favorite of the... I really started to like Blazing Saddles. I love Madeline Kahn in that role. And it was the highest grossing film of 1974. It earned $119.5 million in 1974. So that's really? Quite a bit of money, yeah. And it was nominated for 3 Academy Awards. But my favorite part is that in 2006, it was deemed culturally, historically, or aesthetically significant by the Library of Congress.
Yeah.
And was selected for preservation in the National Film Galaxy or Film Registry. Which blows my mind, but Mel Brooks' quote on that said that the film has to do with love more than anything else. And he's like, I mean, when that black guy rides into that old western town and even a little old lady says, up yours, you know that his heart is broken. So it's really the story of that heart being mended. So if you haven't seen the movie, you might not get that, but it is hilarious. You should watch it.
I thought that movie was about farting.
And beans and Hedley Lamarr.
It's Hedley.
So I don't want to take away from the hilarity of Blazing Saddles.
Bring us down, card.
I'm not going to bring anybody down. Oh. I just want to give a shout out to the producers. I think a lot of people don't know that that was a Mel Brooks movie before it was a musical.
Yeah, with Gene Wilder and Zero Mostow.
That is hilarious.
We have it. The library has it.
Yeah, but I didn't sell as many tickets. And
was that his first
super
movie?
Funny.
It was.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure that it had the immortal hit Springtime for Hitler in it.
It did in the original.
Did it? Okay. Yeah. Because that's the best part of that movie. So, you know, you might ask me, why am I talking about this guy who's 88 years old and all his glory days are behind him? Well, they aren't, because currently he has the revival of the producers is still touring. I think they're touring in England. And then Mel Brooks actually, like, 2 weeks ago gave a one-man show at Prince William's Theater in West End, and the front row tickets were selling for over £500, which is about $800 to $900 per ticket. So he's still ranking in the bucks at 88 years old, which is not too shabby. So the library has pretty much all of his canon. If you have not seen a Mel Brooks movie, feel free to check those out and enjoy your day, because they will be delightful.
He was on WTF like a couple years ago. I think he did like a back-to-back episodes with Mel Brooks and Carl Reiner. Maybe they weren't back to back because they worked together.
Because, they had a 2,000-year-old man.
Yeah, and he just, like he remembered everything. Mm-hmm. So sharp and, like, remembered dates. He's like, I remember it was March 13th, 1934. And, stuff when he was a little kid. So just spectacular.
There's an excellent documentary on Netflix, too. I believe it's called, Make a Noise or
Make
something.
Make a Noise, It was on PBS, I think.
Yeah, it's originally a PBS documentary. Yeah. It's a good biography.
I wonder if we have it, because we have a bunch of, stuff on hand.
I think we do. I think we have it. Correction.
Oh, yeah, don't check out the 12 chairs. We could do an anti-recommendation.
We have the 12 chairs, but I didn't go there.
Oh, man, it was one of the worst.
Is that's him and Bancroft?
That was his follow-up to The Producers, and it's based on some, Russian short story.
Because there's a lot of laughs there.
Yeah. Man. Oh.
Robin Hood, Men in Tight, Dave Chappelle was in.
Bill?
Yes.
Dig us out of this hole of fun, funny movies. We went from talking to funny movies to unfunny movies. How did that happen? Can you correct me there?
Bill's going to talk about Sophie's Choice.
I've got a real
little sheep head.
I really enjoy Schindler's List.
I've got a real knee slapper.
You might enjoy Meryl Streep in The Deer Hunter.
But Bill Pullman, and you forgot, my favorite is Ruthless People.
Where he plays
the stupidest person on the face of the earth.
Nice.
That's an actual line.
You have to watch that.
You will, because it's truly funny.
That Bette Midler and Danny DeVito.
Yeah.
I've never seen
it. Really it's a funny movie. Yeah. It's okay. A funny
it's
movie.
Bill Pullman.
I can see the box.
And this is what, this. I'm sure this is what how he got his job in Spaceballs, because it was right after that.
Oh,
that
it could have been Serpent in the Rainbow.
No.
That's another funny one.
That's another laugh riot.
I love Spaceballs.
Oh, it's me? Well, some years ago, the American Film Institute did a special AFI 100 Years, 100 Laughs. They did a survey of the funniest movies ever made, and the movie I'm going to talk about did not make the list, and it should have, nor did it make Rotten Tomatoes' list of funniest movies ever made, nor Internet Movie Database funniest movies, nor Time Out London Guide list of funniest films. I am truly shocked. The film that I think is one of the funniest movies ever made but never gets the credit, I'm talking about No Time for Sergeants, the 1958 movie directed by Mervyn LeRoy, based upon a novel by Mack Hyman. And we have this book in our collection. It's in the annex, and you can put it on hold, and we'll get it for you. It stars Andy Griffin as Private Will Stockdale, a hillbilly from Georgia who is drafted into the Air Force. This is probably the best fish-out-of-water movie ever made, and I truly believe if there was an actor who was born to play a part, Andy Griffin was meant to play Will Stockdale. Before becoming a movie, as I said, it was a book. It was a live television performance, a hit Broadway play that ran for 2 years and was sold out, and Ira Levin did the adaptation of the play. And do you know what Ira Levin's famous for?
Rosemary's Baby.
Rosemary's, but not a lot of laughs, but he did.
And then, that's kind of cute, baby.
Yeah. Then the movie. The supporting characters, equally great, wonderful character actors, Myron McCormick, Nick Adams, Murray Hamilton, and Don Knotts as Corporal John C. Brown, dexterity tester. This is where Andy Griffin and Don Knotts met, and this movie essentially made their careers. I just highly recommend No Time for Sergeants. If you don't find this movie funny, then something is wrong with you. So enjoy, and that's an order.
Yes, sir.
My dad, I remember, told me about that movie, and I always wanted to see it, and I've never seen it. But like,
so you have no time for sergeants.
Like, I always loved Andy Griffith because it was just the TV show. Yeah. It was always on. And I had like, it's still always.
Yeah.
I've never seen it. Every time that theme song come on, I'm out the door.
It's a funny show. I think that it is one of those things that's like people either love it or they hate it. I haven't watched an episode in years, and I can't remember even a specific episode that I love, but it is super funny. But then when I saw A Face in the Crowd.
Face in the Crowd, I was totally going to mention that because Andy Griffith is amazing.
It's amazing. And it just sort of like, I already thought like Andy Griffith is great. And then I saw that movie and I was like, oh my God, which is also, I mean, it has some funny parts
that's
in
another,
it.
That's another, yeah.
It's funny how it just mirrors today, today's media landscape.
But that's interesting you bring up A Face in the Crowd when Elia Kazan and Bud Schulberg were casting that movie. They were having trouble, and Bud Schulberg said, what about Andy Griffin? He's just down the street in No Time for Sardis doing a Broadway play.
Oh.
Because Zan said, that's really a good idea, and said that's how he got the part. Which, if you see No Time, it's totally obvious.
Face in the Crowd. Only imagine.
Since we bring up, might as well bring up Face in the Crowd. A lot of that was shot right here in Tennessee. As a matter of fact, right over at the War Memorial.
Oh.
One night, my mother was watching it, and she was going, well, I know him. It has all these people that he used. That was noted for Kazan. He used local.
Wow,
and see Judd Collins, who was, I knew him from, he has a cameo in the movie as playing himself, a newsman. But but it's kind of fun to see if you want to look at Nashville history, because
awesome.
He filmed it, like I know a lot of it, right over at the War Memorial.
Awesome.
So, not funny, but highly informative.
It's funny, but not funny.
Funny,
So I'm going to go far, far away, not to outer space, but across the ocean to a movie that is funny, for sure. And that is
it a whale of a tale?
Sort of.
Sorry.
It's a farce. It's a farce in the tradition of the producers. I want to talk about The Ruling Class, which was released in 1972. And I'm just going to give you...
Bill did a happy dance.
Going to give you the premise. Peter O'Toole is a lord named Jack Gurney, and his uncle, who's the patriarch of the family, dies, and he is left the family fortune. Now, the problem is that Jack Gurney, the Peter O'Toole character, is delusional, and he believes that he is Jesus Christ. And he's like the 1960s Jesus freak Jesus, like happy. Like, everybody love one another. Why aren't we having sex and giving flowers to everyone? So this causes an issue for their family because we can't let all the... He can't be in control of the money because he's out of his mind. So what the family does is they give him this radical shock treatment. After that, they think he's better, but actually, inside his head, he believes he's Jack the Ripper. Because they tell him, listen, you're Jack. Your name is Jack. You're not Jesus. So he decides that he is then Jack the Ripper. That's act two. And even better, there's this servant who's been with the family for years named Tucker, played by Arthur Lowell. And what's great is the uncle actually leaves him like a significant amount of money too for being such a loyal servant. But instead of quitting, he just sticks around and is still the servant, but is drunk all the time and says what he really thinks to all the family members in the house. And if I haven't sold you on this already...
Let's do it.
It's a musical.
Of course it is.
Wait, it's a musical?
It's a musical. It's based on a play by Peter Barnes, who also wrote the screenplay. It is hilarious. A lot of other movies that come after that sort of parody, The Ruling Class in Britain, rip this movie off. Peter O'Toole is amazing during his lovely drunk phase.
You mean his life?
Is really good stuff. The Ruling Class.
Sounds like a prequel to King Ralph.
I gotta play that snob card.
Pardon me, would you have any gray poupon?
Perfect. I have just done an interview that's going to be posted very short. By the time this is, it'll be posted with the director of The Ruling Class, Peter Medick.
And we talk about
The Ruling Class extensively. Snap. So snap, snob card, everything.
So
aces and I have blackjack.
Something you're is down the road.
Rolling line. Sevens.
Something big is about to happen. I have a feeling something big is about to happen.
I'm going
to
play my I Don't Want to Bring You Down card.
Don't bring me down!
I do it!
See your stuff card, so, I raise you.
Because he's going to say, according to the rules, that is not snobbery. That is a plug.
That did come to me as like, you know.
From my perspective, that just means that like we don't spend enough reproduction time, because how did I not know that?
How about your desks are how far apart? 5 feet?
Their backs are to each
That's
other.
That's true.
Like we have a content calendar of everything that we're going to talk about.
There's ships in the night.
And if I would have known that, I would have asked you to at least tell him, even not even in the interview, but just off mic, that The Ruling Class is one of my favorite movies ever. So
when I write him a thank you note, I'll do that.
Brian's in.
Wow. The Ruling Class.
That was beautiful.
Directed by Peter Medak. Really, really funny movie.
What year did that come out?
1972.
Rock in the 70s. Today.
And it had a big re-release I saw it in the theater, 82.
Wow.
It was kind of, you know, hey, the Life of Brian came out and was such a hit, they thought, well, let's try The Ruling Class again. So they re-released it.
Mm. Yeah, part of the Criterion Collection, I believe, so if you're into
that.
All right, well, I get to bring you all down to my recommendation. Oh, boy. So today, I thought I'd like to recommend one of the funniest movies I've seen in the theater in years, which was just at the Belcourt and will probably still be there when this posts, What We Do in the Shadows.
When you get three vampires in a flat, obviously there's going to be a lot of tension.
Viago was an 18th century dandy.
Look, a ghost cop.
Vladislav is a bit of a pervert.
This is my torture chamber.
Deacon's like the young bad boy of the group.
I'm supposed to pay rent, but I don't.
The trouble with being a vampire is you have to be invited in.
Like come in to the bar, please. $4 is water.
Will you invite us in?
We need some fresh blood.
Hi, my name is Nick. I've been a vampire for 2 months. My friend Richie is a bouncer. He'll invite us in.
Gentlemen, you are most welcome.
Nick is so much fun.
I'm a vampire.
Vampire!
Vampire!
Such a dick.
Nick, why don't you use the front door? You want to draw attention to this house, hmm?
You've got a whole documentary crew following you around.
You led a vampire hunter into our house.
I don't let him in. I'm just giving my email. He doesn't...
Kill you! I'm already dead!
You will not eat the camera guy. Maybe one camera guy.
Turn the tape. Use your legs.
Wow.
What are we?
When you're a vampire, you become very sexy.
A movie written, directed, and starring Jemaine Clement of Flight of the Conchords and Taika Waititi, who's been in things.
some other stuff with some people.
Well, they say it's like created by the creators of Flight of the Conchords, and it's got Jemaine Clement and the guy who played
Which
Murray.
One? Is Jemaine the
guy with the glasses who's like
the bigger
the taller
guy?
One?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. What We Do in the Shadows is a mockumentary about a group of vampire roommates in Wellington, New Zealand. Clement plays Vladislav, a kind of Vlad the Impaler type, but he was known as the Poker.
Ow.
Yeah. he used to be quite powerful until his powers were taken away by the mysterious Beast, who shows up later in the film. YTT plays Viago, a vampire who moved to New Zealand quite a long time ago for love, but apparently his human familiar got the shipping wrong in his coffin, so it took much longer for him to arrive to New Zealand, and his love had found another.
Aw. Hey,
Deacon is the wild young man of the group because he's only 200 years old, and the scene where he's introduced, you know, he's the crazy wild man, so he hasn't done the chores on the chore wheel in 5 years. And so there's this giant pile of dishes in the sink.
It's been like this the whole time, Deacon, on dishes, and it still hasn't moved in 5 years. You're a cool guy, but you're not pulling your weight in the flat.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that I'm cool.
No, that's not the point, though. You're missing the point.
No, I know.
Not the
flat meeting about how cool you are.
It's funny when you see it. And
we'll take your word for it.
You know, he has a familiar named Jackie, whose job is to clean up after the guys and, you know, clean up their victims every night. And there's piles of, blood all over the walls and stuff. She juggles being a vampire slave with being a full-time wife and mother. So during the day, it's like she's trying to pick up kids from the soccer practice and then mop blood all over the stairs. And downstairs lives Peter, a Nosferatu-type vampire who's been alive for 8,000 years, who doesn't say much. He just They hand him animals. Anyway, the major plot kicks in when a new vampire joins the house, Nick, who's only been a vampire for a couple of months. But Nick and his human friend, Stu, show the boys some of the luxuries of the modern era. Vladislav is trying to get eBay to do his dark bidding, as in he's bidding on a chair. A table, actually. Viago gets in touch with his old familiar using Skype and then berates him for about 5 minutes about shipping on the coffin. But, Master, I did all I could. Did you know how much fees are in the 30s? Good times. But if you can't catch it, the Velcourt, it will be on DVD on May 19th.
Cool. I'm at the risk of being totally redundant and annoying. Jermaine Clement also starred in Gentlemen Broncos, which is one of my favorite comedy movies. I wouldn't have mentioned it, but it's the comedy show. So, gotta put that in there.
Yeah, check that out. You and your yeast lords.
Dude, you like science fiction books?
I do.
You need to see Gentlemen Broncos.
Tickling my fancy is The Hunchback of Notre Dame. This 1997 version, which stars Mandy Patinkin, Richard Harris, and Selma Hayek, will be shown on Saturday, April 11, 2015 at 2 p.m. at the Downtown Public Library on 615 Church Street. This TNT version was shown on television here in the U.S., but distributed in the theaters overseas, I think. I'm pretty sure of this.
Future correction.
Yeah. It was directed by Peter Medic, who directed The Ruling Class, and we have an interview with him in our Legends of Film podcast. So listen to the podcast and come to the movie. It is free.
So I have a question. This was a TNT movie?
Uh-huh.
Do you have the VHS copy you recorded off TV with all the
commercials? No. This is legit. It's in the Warner Archives, and it's going to be presented on the big screen. So everything's legal. And I checked on
I didn't even think about legal. I just thought it was a commercial.
Checked on movie. MovieLick.com, and I'm righteous if I show this. So, Amanda, tickling your fancy.
Yeah, confused people. It's not the Disney version, which I initially thought of when he said Hunchback of Notre Dame from the 90s.
Could make a better version of that. That's a cheery story. Anyway, I would like today to tell you a tale of two Ivanoviches. So, I have talked before about Janet Ivanovich, which I think is the better known of the two. She writes all the Stephanie Plum books, and then she's got a bunch of other stuff that she wrote on the side. Well, there's also a writer out there called Stephanie Ivanovich, and she's been writing for a couple of years, and I'm currently reading one of this. Just kind of worked out. I'm actually listening to Janet Ivanovich's Love in a Nutshell on Overdrive, and then I'm also reading Sweet Spot by Stephanie Ivanovich, just as my lunchtime book.
I'm so lost. Which Ivanovich?
I know. So there is this huge debate. Like, are they related? Are they not related? Is she stealing her name? Because Stephanie Ivanovich, like, people think that she was a pseudonym that she stole because, you know, Janet Ivanovich's main character is Stephanie Plum. And so that she stole it. So here's the kicker. Janet is married to Stephanie's father's brother. So she's a niece by marriage.
Oh, wow.
So they are related, but not by blood. And she's since gotten married. So she's technically Stephanie Ivanovich Gaspich, but she writes Gaspich. G-A-S-P-I-C-H is her last name.
Gaspich.
Okay. You gotta be careful pronouncing that.
Okay, I don't know. I
heard,
it like
heard something else.
You can say it the right way, and it's still funny. So it
true.
Doesn't matter.
So, wow. But the reason that this caught my fancy is because the stories are basically the same. So in Sweet Spot,
this is catching your fancy, or is it tickling your fancy?
I like them together.
I'm sorry.
Because, like, in Sweet Spot, in Stephanie's book, I have a rich ball player with a heroine who owns the restaurant. In Love in a Nutshell, Janet's book, I have he's a rich guy who owns a brewery, and she works in it and wants to open a bed and breakfast.
Whoa.
And so in both of them, both heroines are feisty, both guys are rich. It's so, like, it's the same basic story, just with a little bit of twist here and there. And so it's kind of hard. Like, it's good that I'm listening to them on top of each other, but it's kind of hard because I have to say, okay, now what happened in what book with them?
Thanksgiving is going to be awkward at their house.
Yeah, but we do have Sweet Spot in book form, and we have Love in a Nutshell in book form and on Overdrive, and I think we probably have audio on both of these too. So if you need some fun, pick out an Ivanovich and go to it.
All right. I don't know. Like, I spaced out for a second there, and then I
come lost
back.
You at father's uncle's cousin's brother.
Yeah, right? You know. What does that make us? Absolutely nothing.
Absolutely nothing.
You said Ivanovich, and I saw the cataloger and him go. It was like a house settling
again.
Or something.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. I guess. Oh well, yeah. I think Ivanovich. I think more work. So.
But I never will forget when they. I just happened to stunt at Davis Kidd when moment of silence. But when Davis was kid, and they just happened to be there signing this when they were starting out.
Janet Ivanovich.
Yeah.
Yeah, because Stephanie was probably four at that point.
And they were. And she was a wild woman. It was like a big party out there. I've never seen a autograph signing like that. It was all woohoo, women power.
Red hair.
I mean,
red
this was back guys. When it was just first starting out. I'm sorry, Mike.
Okay. Well, technically, my fancy this week is
party women.
Yeah. Ooh. 60 times.
Podcast after that.
Yes, the episode that we record for ourselves, not for the listeners.
Wow. Ooh.
I'm not sure I could listen to that.
The film.
Yeah. I just want everyone that's listening to know that I've never partaken in that podcast, and I have no idea what they're talking about. So what you guys do in the shadows is totally up there.
Yeah.
Shadow news.
That's right. They call me the...
Don't make it so I have to edit things out.
Okay.
Hey, I didn't say anything, you know, totally. Okay. So, I originally vowed to myself that I wouldn't mention much horror stuff outside of Shocktober, but things keep coming up, you know, it's not my fault that when I think of plants, I think of moss growing on Stephen King. Token Creepshow references, let's see. Hooray. I hug my magnet.
Bill gave Mike a Creepshow magnet earlier.
It was like the best gift ever.
For those of you that are listening.
Woohoo! I can hold my breath when I see that. I was pleased to be one of those who got into the advanced screening of It Follows at the Belcourt, along with Brian. I saw in the back.
Holla.
You know, it's really cool. So I get to mention Belcourt yet again. So it stars Micah Monroe, who's been making like a career lately in kind of the 80s throwback movie. I mean, she also starred in like The Guest. And there's kind of like a similar kind of vibe with The Guest and It Follows. And it's kind of like an 80s throwback that doesn't use any actual like 80s throwback music. And it's got like a similar, you know, it sets a tone without it like clearly homaging a specific movie, but, you know, more like a genre. And it's like amazingly amazing. She stars as Jay, a normal teenage girl who starts dating this older boy. And after a couple of dates, you know, one thing leads to another and they have sex, where then he immediately drugs her and ties her to a chair. And says that she has now inherited a creature who will follow her till she dies, unless she could pass the curse along to another by also having sex. Oh boy. So the creature always follows on foot. Her now ex-boyfriend says in a memorable line that it is slow but not stupid, and don't let it touch her. It is invisible to everyone but her, and it takes the shape of a random person, where, like, you know, it's theorized that it takes the shape of people that she loves in order to mess with her. Ooh. I like the kind of, like, subtle, like, slow burn kind of horror, where, like, you know, it's coming, you know, there's, like, a kind of sense of dread, you know, but it's not, like, always there. And I like that, you know, sometimes somebody will slowly be walking in the background, but you don't know if it's the creature or not, because they're blending in with, like, crowds and stuff. And, I also like that, much like that movie that I mentioned a bunch last year that I'm not going to mention again, this is a horror movie that has, like, you know, themes. The STD metaphor was so blatant that the Belcourt brought in a doctor specializing in AIDS research to the Science on Screen screening, which was, oh, speaking of downers. You know, I didn't know that babies could be born with AIDS.
You didn't know that?
Well, you know, I knew they could be born with, like, other ones.
And that bacterial STDs are becoming increasingly drug-resistant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good times.
Viral STDs are incurable, but bacterial STDs are now drug-resistant.
Not April Fool's.
Yeah, good times.
What are some examples of those so I know what to talk to my doctor about?
I've just heard about that on the internet.
Welcome to the Health
Podcast. I was at the screening, so I know all about drug-resistant STDs.
What'd you think, Brian?
What did I think?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that movie was awesome.
Okay.
I like the...
Have you ever heard him say the word awesome?
No, it must actually be awesome.
I haven't. I feel
I
like
think
it,
you have.
No. Yeah, because he talked about the Lego movie.
I thought that would be an awesome. Actually, this is so weird. Like, I'm having this thing where I think I'm saying awesome all the time.
You said, like, every movie we've talked about today is your favorite movie, though.
Oh, you were mocking me?
It might be that you've been talking to me too much.
I haven't heard you say awesome that much.
I really haven't.
But we don't hang out that much.
The movie was stupendous.
Awesome. It was
fantastic.
So I like this trend of, like, sort of raw 80s synthesizer scores that's happening in independent movies.
Yeah.
Sometimes movies that are, like, kind of, like, stripped down to one thing. And you're right, though. There's a lot of themes in this movie. But, you know, there's the monster and it follows you. And that's what it's about. And sometimes that's what really makes horror movies the best. It's kind of like, you know, the first 5 minutes, the cemetery scene of Night of the Living Dead. It's like would turn into a whole movie for 90 minutes, and it's pretty cool. And, you know, the lead, Micah Monroe, she kind of reminds me of Brittany Murphy. At least she did in The Guest.
Oh, yeah, I can see that. Yeah.
In The Guest, they did her makeup, right, to kind of make her look like Brittany Murphy.
I meant to track you down afterwards. But
well, I want to see it this weekend. So.
One thing that's about it that is kind of cool is that even though there is this trend of, like, throwback to 80s horror, the actual decade that the movie is set in is totally ambiguous and, like,
yes,
it's
they're very
serious
vague
head screw.
With, yeah, like, you know, the technology's a little off.
Yeah, it's like the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and 2020s are all, like, merged into one weird horror movie dream space.
That's great.
Yeah.
I mean, and I didn't even know it was set in Detroit until, like, they mentioned a throwaway line. I mean, they could have been set anywhere. It's kind of depressed.
Oh, yeah, totally, yeah. They didn't have, yeah. I mean, later they make it explicit that they're in Detroit. But,
yeah.
Yeah. Huh. So, Jeremy.
Tickling my fancy this week is Heavier Than Heaven by Charles R. Cross. This is a biography of Kurt Cobain. I downloaded it from Overdrive. I listened to it in, like, a few big chunks over a couple of days last week, and it was really heartbreaking. I always sort of thought of Kurt Cobain-related stuff as kind of exploitive, because after he died, you know, kids at school had "I Think I'm Dumb" shirts with his face on it or whatever. And but he also was fascinating to me because of his death, and music was sort of a defining thing in my young pop culture life. And so I was scrolling through Overdrive looking for some stuff to listen to, and I found that. I thought I'd give it a chance, even though, despite my hesitation. And I didn't, it wasn't scandalous or, because there's the whole, did Courtney Love have him murdered sort of thing, which I don't know anything about that stuff. That would be great if that happened, you know?
It would be great if Courtney Love murdered her husband.
Just her husband.
In the same way that it would be great if the CIA killed JFK or if space aliens were at Area 51. You know what I mean? Like, just some sort of dark secret that is under, like, if men in a room somewhere were controlling things, pressing buttons.
But they're not.
I'm doing that right now. I'm doing that.
That's true. Well, I'm just saying, it's like the real story is probably just like, he was a drug addict who was depressed, and he killed himself.
It's like, have you met musicians?
Yeah, exactly. So
I can give you decades worth, centuries worth.
So it's like it wasn't scandalous. It didn't sort of go into those waters. It wasn't really gossipy. And please allow me to play the snob card on myself.
Editor's note: Jeremy cannot use his snob card here because he had played it earlier in this episode.
Because the book was just straight reportage.
That's a big word.
Oh.
And it's French.
I would have tried to use that word, but pronounced it wrong.
Reportage.
Reportage. So
funny pronunciation.
This book follows his life from the very, very beginning. There are excerpts from his journal. There's a full reading of his suicide note. And Courtney Love, who was his wife, and I mentioned, she is often sort of labeled as sort of this parasite who sort of fed off his fame, and she's not depicted in that way. She is depicted as ambitious, but their love is portrayed as a very real thing. And I started crying at the end of it as I was reading the description of him going to kill himself, because it was really harrowing.
Way to end the show.
Comedy.
That I noticed.
We were awesome.
Right. I listened to the show and I was trying to find a correction, but I think I was wrong. My correction was wrong, so I don't want to correct my correction.
There was one that bugged me from like the Roman episode, because it sounded like I said third man, but I said thin man. Get all excited and try to like rush it out of my mouth. Ever since I was a little kid, my grandparents were like, we thought you'd outgrow that, Mark, but you didn't.
They should have beat you with a stick.
I was going to say, thanks for working on it, Grandma.
Harder. They should have beat you with a bigger, harder stick more.
I'll switch the phrase. All right,
then you would never speak again. For more information about corporal punishment in the Roman Empire, you can go to
www.library.nashville.org.
We've done this a few times before, and our theme music is by
MD.
Hey, what? We just decided what we were going to talk about next week. Pop quiz, what is it?
Civil War.
All right.
The end of the Civil War.
Why would we celebrate the Civil War? We're celebrating the end of the Civil War.
We're all getting along just dandy. South will never rise again.
Go Yankees.
I'm moving a little slow tonight. I had a hot pocket for dinner. Good to see I'm not the only white trash here. I buy the Hot Pockets. I go in grocery stores. I'm like, oh, I'll get these. I've never eaten a Hot Pocket and then afterwards been, I'm glad I ate that. I'm always like, I'm going to die. I paid for that? Did I eat it or rub it on my face? My back hurts. Ow. I was looking at a box of Hot Pockets. They have a warning printed on the side. It said, warning, you just bought Hot Pockets. Hope you're drunk or heading home to a trailer. You hillbilly, enjoy the next NASCAR event. Hot Pockets. I like NASCAR. He's a jerk.